This is a special edition of the RTI Press Pass powered by Rocky Top Insider. Here are your hosts, Jack Foster and Ryan Shumpert.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back into the Rocky Top Insider Baseball Press Pass podcast. I'm your host, Jack Foster, joined alongside Ryan Shumpert on this Wednesday afternoon. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Yeah, glad to be back on and glad to, be going more full speed into baseball. Obviously, basketball season was a ton of fun, and that was a great run, but that's the positive of that being over. Now I get to turn full attention to baseball, and obviously, Tennessee baseball coming off a pretty big weekend win over Georgia.
Right. I know that you and Rick just recorded a, regular Press Pass podcast, if you will, talking obviously Tennessee basketball and the end of the season and all that stuff. Just what's it like for you after the gauntlet that is the season going into the NCAA tournament, covering your first Elite Eight matchup? Has it fully processed for you yet?
Yeah, I'm not sure it has. The tournament as a whole, just from the time the postseason starts, is such a, and I said this on our podcast too, it's such an adrenaline rush of just one thing after another of pregame, media, the day before game, reverse it, come, they win the first week and come back home, book all your new stuff, 48 hours, do laundry, and then all over again. So it's just, it's really never ending once the time really for an SEC tournament on until the season's over. And yesterday, obviously the season ended Sunday. We got back Monday. Yesterday was kind of the first day. It was like, all right, what do I do with myself now? It's starting to slow up a little bit. So it was certainly a really fun run and a chaotic month or so covering it the postseason.
Well, baseball is what you do, Ryan. And that's what we're going to get into today.
That's right. Because
it's in full swing, if you will. We're three series into SEC play. Tennessee has 1-2, lost one, having won their past two against Ole Miss and Georgia. All three series have gone to a rubber match, which is something that Tennessee didn't do until, I believe, either late April or early May last year. So the fact they've already had three of those, something that Tony Vitello is actually pretty grateful for. He obviously finds the positives in playing big games like that on Sundays so early in the season. Of course, Tennessee would, always like to have series wrapped up by Sunday, but having those rubber matches is beneficial this early in SEC play. After losing 16-2 on Friday, things didn't look good for the series, Ryan. They got run rolled for the first time ever. Now, there's a caveat. Run roll's only been in effect for 2 years. So, obviously, Tennessee, is not going to get run rolled a lot. But that was the first time they ever have in program history on Friday night. AJ Causey was, not good for the first time this season. He really got rocked by Georgia's incredibly good lineup. And then it was more of the same on Saturday until Tennessee was able to come back and win a high-scoring classic in my eyes, 16-10. And then on Sunday, a shutout victory. Who saw that coming on Sunday, right? So there's a lot to get in for this series. But let's start with Friday and your thoughts on AJ Causey really experiencing a poor outing for the first time this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising because you haven't seen it. But, it also happens in Georgia. Like you said, has a really good lineup. And I don't think it's just unfathomable. And I think at this point, it's just kind of one bad start. I don't think you look at it as something very concerning in the long term. But there's certainly a pressure on causing, and we'll get to it because it's on beam too. And, just the lack of depth Tennessee has pitching and the lack of arms they trust right now, you feel like you need those guys to be good every weekend. And even if they're not good, maybe the numbers don't look good, you need Beam to do what he did against Alabama, where, he gives up six runs, but he gets you deep in the game and he eats a lot of outs. So I think any poor or even just short outing from either of those guys is going to be magnified. And it's going to be maybe a bigger issue than it would be in a normal year. But I think when you're talking about the long-term concerns, I'm not, totally worried about Causey or anything like that.
I agree. And, maybe this isn't how I should look into it, but considering what, how much Drew Beam struggled on Saturday too, I mean, you can't say one outing was worse than the other when it comes to Causey and Beam. They both got rocked. They both gave up, I believe, 7-9 runs. Beam actually got bounced earlier than Causey did. So considering both of them had such mighty struggles against this Georgia lineup, I think you can kind of just chalk it up to, yeah, they had a really bad day against a really good lineup. It's, there's a little bit of cause for concern moving forward that they're not going to be, as you said, able to eat up 6 to 7 innings literally every start in SEC play. But, I mean, it's not like Tennessee can turn anywhere else, and it's not like these guys aren't really good pitchers and they haven't done a lot for Tennessee so far this season. So, you know, maybe it's just a blip on the radar, but I think you have to realize that, you know, their start, Causey and Beam, are not going to just be downright dominant every time.
Yeah, no, they're not. You know, neither of them are elite pitchers. I think they're both really good pitchers and good SEC weekend starters. And I think we've seen where both of them have flashes where they can be elite. Like, the ceiling is there. But they're not, I don't know. I haven't watched enough SEC baseball this season, to this point in the season, to say this with complete, you know, facts or confidence. But I wouldn't think either of them are top five pitchers by any means in the SEC or anything like that. They're just good weekend arms, and that's going to happen to you sometime against good lineups. And, you know, I think it's obviously unfortunate that it happened for Tennessee in back-to-back games. But that's where what the offense did and what Kirby gave Tennessee out of the bullpen on Saturday was so important, because to me that kind of felt like one we could look back on as kind of an inflection point in the season. I mean, they very, very easily, what were they down, 7-3 in that game on Saturday?
Yeah, 7-3 and then 8-4. So they were down 4 runs twice. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you lose that game, you fall to 3-5, right? 3-5 in SEC play if they lose that game. A lot of pressure to be able to win the series finale. And even then, you're talking about two of your first three series. Two of them are at home. None of them are against the top of the league. Now, all three of Ole Miss, Georgia, and Alabama are pretty solid. I think they'll all be competitive to make the NCAA tournament. So it's not like they were cakewalks, but you felt like they needed to have a winning record in those first three series to bolster their chances of hosting a regional, and then maybe then get on a run hosting a super regional, being a national seed. So I think that's one where we could look back at the end of the year and say that Saturday win over Georgia was one of the biggest wins of the season.
Yeah, that was the game of the weekend for sure. Do want to emphasize before we dive into Saturday's huge game is that, you know, the A.J. Causey performance was more surprising than Drew Beam in my eyes, just because we know Beam's going to get hit around a little bit during his outings. Causey, we hadn't really seen that. Now we have. So, you know, just a big takeaway I kind of had was that the Causey performance was definitely more surprising than Beam's performance. But you talk about Saturday, I mean, game of the year candidate right here. There's been a lot of good games from Tennessee season so far. Most of them, they've actually lost those close games and they bring the tying run to the plate late and just can't get it done. But this one was just, you know, if you like offense, you loved Saturday night in Lindsey Nelson Stadium. As you mentioned, Georgia goes up 7-3 and then later 8-4 in the fourth as Beam struggles. Tennessee was actually up 3-0 in the first inning because Dylan Dreiling, who was the player of the game, hit a 3-run homer in the first inning. But you really saw Tennessee have that resiliency that they've pretty much had all season, but it really came out on Saturday night and they were able to come back. 6-run fifth inning, later on a 6-run seventh inning. And Kirby Cannell is, you know, something we really have to dive into on this game. But Ryan, how clutch is Dylan Dreiling? I mean, even going back to last season, that Vanderbilt game, right? So many pinch hit ABs he had when he delivered, coming through like this on Saturday night for Tennessee. 7 RBIs, 3-run homer, and the grand slam in the fifth inning. I mean, I don't see how, you know, maybe he's not just the most gifted player on Tennessee's team. Maybe he's not just the best player on Tennessee's team. I don't know. But clutch player, it's not even close. Dylan Dreiling takes the cake.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And it just feels like he's the guy you went up in a big moment for sure. And, you know, he's hitting 360, so it's not like he's hitting poorly or anything like that. But no, he's not near the team high in batting average, but he's tied for the most in home runs. He's got a pretty hefty lead on RBIs, and it just feels like there's something about him in those big moments where he always comes through. And, you know, I'll even one that didn't end up mattering, but the game 3 at Alabama against that lefty that came in for Alabama and was just throwing nasty breaking balls and really made, I think it was Tears and Villeneuve look bad in strikeouts. And I mean, Dreiling just battled and fouled off pitches and, you know, worked an RBI walk and, you know, passed the torch along. And obviously Tennessee didn't end up getting the big hit to come back and tie or win that game, but it's just something about him in those big moments he comes through. And certainly both home runs he had against Georgia, especially the one or on Saturday against Georgia, especially the one in the fifth inning, the grand slam, were just absolutely massive and kind of flipping the tide of that game and helping Tennessee get what was such a huge win.
loudest Lindsey Nelson Stadium has been all season, no doubt. When that grand slam went over the right field wall for Dylan Dreiling, it was a no-doubter, I might add. But yeah, I think when, you know, everyone always talks about the 22 team, the margins weren't really all that close because Tennessee was blowing everybody out and you just kind of knew it was going to happen. And you had so many guys that could just, you know, come in through the clutch or come in a big moment. When, you know, going back to last season, it was Zane Denton. And this season, I think it's Dylan Dreiling on a higher level. But when the margins are close and, you know, there's going to be a ton of close games and there's going to be, as we've seen, three rubber matches, nothing's a gimme in SEC play, no matter who you're facing. I think what Dylan Dreiling brings to the table in those moments makes him probably the most important player on this roster, just because he has that kind of gear, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And I think from the lineup standpoint, there's definitely something to that. I think just when you look at the maybe the holes or weaknesses in Tennessee's roster, I'd say I would choose a pitcher probably for the most important, just to find some more help. But no, I definitely see what you're saying. And I think, I mean, just kind of off the point you made earlier that I think is really important is that you talked about there being no quit in this team. And I think that's just something they're going to need to have. And it's going to need to be, I think, a very even keel team, because with the pitching, I think there's going to be some games where you're down, just like Saturday. You're down a handful of runs in the middle of the game, but your lineup's good enough that you're not out of it. I mean, and you're obviously not sitting in a great spot, but you're not out of it either. And you need to look at it that way. You don't need to panic. You don't need to press because you're down. And on the same way, there's going to be games where Tennessee's up by three runs in the seventh inning. And if they don't keep their foot on the pedal and keep on scoring more, things could very easily get dicey late in games because of some of the questions about the pitching staff. So I think you're right. I think what we've seen, the kind of determination from Tennessee's team as a whole and that never say die mindset, even though, like you said, in a lot of games, a lot of these close games, Tennessee hasn't won to this point besides Saturday. I think that's still just a really good sign, because I think that kind of lock in focus for nine innings is going to be super important for this team. And just like you said, a lot of games in SEC play that are going to be close, a lot of games that are going to be competitive, and a lot of games that, you know, might not be blowouts, but aren't necessarily 1-2 run games that could turn into real tight games, I think, in a hurry.
I mean, I think there's no doubt about it up to this point from what we've seen is that Tennessee is going to have to win with offense. Like, maybe Xander shoves again and pitches six scoreless innings against one of the best offenses in the country, allowing only four hits. Maybe that happens again. Maybe he can do that every week. Who knows? Maybe Drew Beam and AJ Causey never have an outing like this again. But I think you have to realize that in this 2024 Tennessee baseball season, they're going to have to win with offense, and it's probably going to have to be 8 to 9 runs more times than not.
Yeah, no, I think Tennessee certainly has starting pitchers, and you know, you have Snead in there too, who can eat up a lot of innings and out of the bullpen, that are good enough that Tennessee will win games the rest of the year where they give up, you know, three or less runs. But going into the game, going into a weekend series, the expectation of what you got to do to win is like you said, to be scoring 7+ runs. And, you know, sometimes it could end up being 9-10 runs that you have to score to win. So you're right. This is going to be a team that wins with their offense. And certainly I think maybe what inspires a lot of confidence in their ability to do that too, is just the fact that they do have depth and they have a handful of guys, even that aren't going to start every day, that if someone does struggle, if someone's in a slump, you can throw those guys in and you feel like you have the flexibility to keep this lineup, you know, 1-9 really, really effective throughout the season, kind of no matter what happens.
Yeah, before we get to Kirby, just a couple more offense notes from the Saturday game. Blake Burke went 3-4. I think he's hitting the baseball better than anyone on Tennessee's team right now. Has an SEC high, I believe, 16 doubles now. Has hit streaks up to 18 games. On base streak, 27 games. This is the best streak, if lack of a better word, or just stretch from Blake Burke I think we've seen in a Tennessee uniform so far. And then on Saturday, he also tied the program home run record with his 40th career homer, so that's cool to see. But Dalton Bargo, Ryan, I mentioned Dylan Dreiling hit that grand slam in the fifth inning. Well, what kicked off that fifth inning was Tony Vitale pinch hitting Dalton Bargo for Ariel Antigua. Dalton Bargo gets a leadoff single and really starts that rally, I guess if you call it, in the fifth inning, or just really starts that onslaught Tennessee had offensively. He hits the grand slam later in the game in the seventh inning, so obviously Tony Vitale's decision worked wonders, right? And when you pinch hit Dalton Bargos, had this hamstring injury, and you know, we've heard he can't really field that all that well, and he's been pinch run for a couple of times. It's like, what's Tennessee going to do? They got to move Dean Curley over to shortstop, right? But who's going to play third? Is it going to be Bargo? It was Bargo, and he did pretty good, and then he got the start there on Sunday. So Dalton Bargo, a guy who can play the infield now, he's healthy enough to do that, and no doubt about it, one of the best nine hitters on Tennessee's team right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's... He's the guy that, you know, was obviously really good in pre-conference slate, but it's pre-conference slate and he wasn't an everyday starter. So you're still kind of wondering what his role is going to be. How is he going to fit in? But, you know, every opportunity he's gotten in SEC play. And like you said, due to that hamstring injury he suffered at Alabama, that had him a little gimpy. And, you know, I think he pinch hit against Ole Miss, but didn't get a start or anything like that. That he was one of those guys you worried that might be in danger of just falling out of the rotation because of the injury, because of just the fact that obviously Amick's got that third base spot locked down when he's healthy. And, you know, everybody in the outfield for Tennessee, it feels like has been hitting the ball well for the most part. But no, he's asserted himself as a no doubt guy that's going to be in the rotation, going to be getting starts. And I think, you know, that's one of the things we talked about when Tennessee landed him, was like, man, this guy's versatility is insane. Like, he can play so many spots on the field. And there, you saw it this weekend when he, you know, comes in, pinch hits, plays third base, and then starts Sunday at third base. He hasn't played in the infield. Has he played in the infield any this year? Maybe. I was thinking maybe he'd gotten like an inning at first base, but really it seems like Robin's been the guy that's done that. I guess when Blake was suspended, or maybe in some late game blowouts when they take Blake out. So for him to go in the infield and then to have the trust in him to do that, I think says a lot and just preaches to his versatility. And I think is, this year, as roles are more designated and, you know, set in stone, obviously we probably won't see him there a lot, but just going forward, he's a guy that's going to have another year in the program. And the fact that they can play him at so many spots is one of his great strengths. And then, yeah, it's just kind of furthering your point. The fact that after, you know, just, I guess, 2 weeks exactly after he suffered that, because it was the Saturday game, I believe, at Alabama, where he suffered that hamstring injury, 2 weeks after that, he's back, able to play in the field, able to run the bases. I think that's, you know, a really encouraging sign that this isn't something that's going to sideline him for, or at least limit him for as long as hamstring injuries, you know, oftentimes can.
Yeah, I went 2-for-5 on Sunday, so followed Saturday's performance up with another good one. I'll say this, maybe it's a hot take, and maybe it's a little bit of recency bias since Robin didn't have a hit this past weekend, but I think Dalton Bargo should be the DH more times than not. Like, I understand that Billy's back. He's going to play third. The outfield doesn't really seem like Bargo's should jump either Inslee or Chapman, given how good they are defensively and how, frankly, good Chapman's been at the plate. So I think Dalton Bargo should be the DH almost all the time. That's just my take, given what we've seen from his bat and the inconsistencies we've seen from Villeneuve in SEC play.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I've been watching it enough to be able to say, have an educated opinion, but certainly he's been more productive for the most part. And obviously you have a righty and a lefty, so it allows you to maybe stagger some stuff too, right, depending on who's on the mound. And that would fit with what you're saying of Bargo getting more starts, because obviously you're going to run into more right-handed starting pitchers for the most part.
Right. Well, one of the performances of the year so far for Tennessee was Kirby Cannell's relief performance on Saturday. Comes out, throws a career-high 5 innings, 94 pitches. I don't think anyone thought that was possible, probably including Kirby, right? So he got the win with the performance, only allowed 3 earned runs, did walk 3, struck out 2. But considering what Georgia had done to Causey and Beam so far that weekend, that was a blessing for Tennessee to have Kirby come out and just kind of steady the game, keep Georgia, you know, under control and not let the game get out of hand as Tennessee's offense mounted the comeback. But the two numbers you look at are 5 innings and 94 pitches. Don't know if Kirby can do this every week, but Brian, I said it before we started recording, it seems like Kirby Cannell is Tennessee's second best bullpen arm right now behind Nate Snead.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly an argument to be made for that, and it's probably the case. And it's what we're talking about of how magnified both Causey and Beam starts are because of the lack of arms for both of them to have short outings. And obviously Tennessee got run ruled, which on Friday, which meant that, you know, 2 less innings that they needed to, 6 less outs they had to get. But it's like, oh my gosh, how are they going to find arms to bridge this thing? And Kirby was the first part of it. And I mean, it was just so huge. And his numbers won't look as good as, you know, 3 earned runs in 5 innings is like, okay, that's just like fine. But it was huge in a game like that that had so much scoring. And if you know, in any given weekend, not necessarily a single game, but if any given weekend Kirby gives Tennessee 5 innings and gives up 3 earned runs, I think you take it every time, because that just, it keeps you in the hunt. It keeps you in the hunt with that lineup. You're not, it's not terrible, and you don't expect Kirby to just be dominant out there, but it eats out its productive innings pitched. And I mean, that was absolutely huge for Tennessee, what Kirby gave him. And it almost, that this Saturday game was the game I got to watch the most of, and really got to watch the majority of it while doing some basketball work at the arena. But it had some, Kirby had some Cannon Sewell vibes of it, of getting those pitches up into the 90s. It's like, this dude's arm might fall off at any minute, but he's gonna push through and do what he needs to do to get Tennessee as far as he can in this game, and hopefully pick up a win.
Yeah, it was pretty electric. I mean, just start of the new inning, it's like, okay, Marcus Phillips, Nate Snead, who's coming out for Tennessee? And nope, 35 back out on the mound. It's like,
trotting back out there.
How many pitches is this dude going to throw? His previous career high, I believe, was 68 in that Campbell game, 2022 regional. I don't know if you remember, but that was a big storyline. Then it's like, wow, we've never seen an outing like this from Kirby out of the pen. 4 innings, I believe, he pitched. And that was kind of like it was on steroids on Saturday with 5 innings and 94. So an incredible performance from Kirby. And I don't think we'll see 5 innings moving forward. If I had to bet, I'd say that's the longest he goes this season. But I think 3 is what Tennessee will look for from Kirby. And that's key. 3 innings is key. And especially considering it's still going to be a new role for Kirby Gnell, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a new role, but at the same time, like, he kind of had that role a little bit in 21. I'm pulling it up here now, and I think 1, 2, 3, 4.
It's been 3 years, is what I'm saying. Yes, like, yes, he had that role, but it's been 3 years.
Yeah, but it's not like he hasn't done it before, is my thing. So it's you're right. Yeah, it's asking more out of him, but it's not like, it's just so weird because these things are typically so linear when you build into a role. He had that role at the start of his career, and even then, he never pitched 5 innings, but he was a guy that could be a middle relief guy to pick up a handful of innings, and then he went so far to the opposite in the last 2 years, where it was like, come in and throw 7 pitches and get one guy out, or heck, 3 pitches maybe sometimes. And now it's, you know, I don't know if it's going to be a given that he's going to be able to give Tennessee 3 innings at a time, but it's back in play, and it's back something that if he could, it would, you know, they need it. You know, in the last 2 years, he probably could have some too, but Tennessee didn't need it. Now they need it. And anytime he can do it, it would be huge for the Vols.
Yeah. It's not necessarily surprising that he has the ability to do it. It's just that that's the reality now in 24, considering what we've seen the past 2 seasons, is that Kirby now is back being that guy, as you said. Well, it's only right to talk about Xander Seacrest after Kirby Cannell, right? Best buds, lefties, not high velo. Xander gets the start on Sunday in a crucial rubber match. You know, Tennessee obviously lost big Friday night. We just recapped Saturday, 16-11 thriller. You enter the rubber match. Tennessee doesn't have many options out of the bullpen. You know, you look at those freshman lefties. Tony said Snead could go again, which he ended up doing. But it was pretty important for Xander to have a good start, and he smashed all expectations going 6 innings. Only allowing 4 hits, 0 runs. Again, like his friend Kirby said, in career highs in innings pitched and total pitches with 6 and 102, respectively. He dominated Georgia Ryan. 7 Ks, as I mentioned, only 4 hits, 1 walk allowed. This was pretty wild. I thought that maybe Xander could get Tennessee 6 to 9 outs, and the hope is that he wouldn't give up more than 3 runs in 3 innings. Man, this performance, I don't think anyone saw coming, but Xander really made a statement on Sunday in the win.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, that was obviously right at the same time as the Elite Eight game. So I was kind of following the score a little bit on Twitter, but certainly not locked into what was going on or anything like that. And, you know, after the game, get story up, they opened locker room, sent in a press conference for Barnes, and then, you know, kind of just went and, all right, let's take, I guess probably around that time was when the game was ending. It's like, okay, let's see what the stat broadcast was. Obviously, good day for Tennessee's pitching staff. And I mean, when I saw that he pitched 6 innings,
obviously I knew the score was going to need to find a score. I was like, my jaw dropped. That's what I was fascinated to see. I was like, all right, well, how did Tennessee find enough outs in this game? Who in the world pitched for Tennessee? And for him to do that was just so, so impressive. I mean, just huge. And, you know, it's by far the best start we've seen from him in any game of consequence at Tennessee. And, you kind of said it. We've said it on here in the past. It feels like two innings is kind of what you want for him as the opener. And you're, if you can steal some more outs, that would be big. And obviously this was an instance where Tennessee needed to steal as many outs as they could from him. And obviously you were there. But I imagine the vibe I get is that you kind of got to that third inning and it was like, all right, this is Xander's game. I mean, as good as he's been. So just super impressive what he gave Tennessee.
Yeah, no, it was lights out. And, you know, it was one of those deals where you just thought the wheels were going to come off at some point. And he kept his composure throughout. And Charlie Condon, by the way, you know, Georgia's star player, is going to go 1-1 in this year's draft. You know, went 5-6 on Saturday in LNS, just torching Tennessee's arms. On Sunday against Xander, goes, 0-3 against Xander, and then didn't get a hit against Nate Snead either. So 0-4. On the day was Charlie Condon. So really impressive by Snead and Sechrist to limit Condon and this entire Georgia offense as a whole. Nate Snead, someone who maybe his weekend flies under the radar, considering he didn't really go too long in either performance. But the fact he threw 26 pitches on Saturday night to close it out and then can come back less than 24 hours later, go three innings, 36 pitches, not give up a run. I think that's really encouraging for moving forward when, you know, it's not going to be lockstep. These relief pitchers are optimal on this day. These relief pitchers are optimal on Saturday, Sunday, right? Snead, if he can give you multiple days, considering he's your best bullpen arm, that's huge.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, we finally saw what I've been saying I think we'd see in like the Sean Hundley role for Nate Snead. And we've mainly seen it just him pitch a ton on one day, and it's always been Sunday. But you saw him go get you the final, what I think it was 5 outs of the game on Saturday, and then the final 9 outs of the game on Sunday. Like, that's just massive. I mean, that's a huge versatility and flexibility as you kind of try to piece things together and piece it together for a bullpen at Sten. Again, really, really impressive. I mean, I think with Causey's struggles this weekend, I think now there's, you know, the sample size is still real small when you're talking about only SEC play. I think there's an argument to be made that Snead's been Tennessee's best pitcher. Not just best bullpen arm, best pitcher in SEC play. It's those two. Those two, 1 and 2 in some order.
Who was the other one? Snead and who?
Causey.
Yeah, I think after last weekend, it's got to be Snead 1, right? I mean, he hasn't had a performance like AJ did. Snead has been huge for Tennessee this season and, you know, definitely one of the most valuable players on this roster. Any more pitching notes, Ryan, that you had from this weekend? We know this bullpen's shallow. We've been talking about it the whole time. It's pretty simple. Starters are going to try and give Tennessee as much as they can. It seems like it's going to be Causey Beam Sechrist moving forward. As A.J. Russell, injury note, he's going to be out at least a couple of weeks. Nothing specific, but he did avoid worst-case scenario, so that's good for A.J. Russell. But Tennessee's going to be without him for a couple weeks. So with this Causey Beam Sechrist rotation, it's just get as many innings as you can, and then they're going to rely on Snead, Kirby, and then we'll see who can step up after that, whether it's Phillips, Binky, or Combs, if he can kind of rebound and put together some better innings moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of Combs and Binky kind of surprised me a little bit. I know Binky was maybe sick on the midweek last week, so maybe that was still plaguing him a little bit, and that kept him out. But, you know, those are the two guys I think you're definitely going to see some, or more than you saw this weekend, which, granted, they didn't pitch this weekend. And then, yeah, the freshmen, I mean, those are the continued guys that I think can change Tennessee's ceiling, and obviously neither Schaefer or Dallas had very good outings on Friday. Obviously, good times not to have good outings. Tennessee's already getting beat really.
Right. It was just kind of being thrown to the wolves, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. But as you step forward in the first weekend where you fully, you know, are trying to piece things together without Russell, not an encouraging first sign, as those are two of the guys that you feel like could really, really help Tennessee. But it'll be interesting to see what it all looks like and if anyone can really grab roles, because right now maybe a couple guys have grabbed roles, but for the most part it just feels like a lot of rotation trying to find something, trying to find someone that has something on this day or this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And as far as lineup final thoughts go, I mean, I kind of mentioned my thoughts on the DH spot. We'll see what happens there. I think the outfield, you'll see more of the same. Maybe probably more Rhys Chapman moving forward, as he's been so good. Hit 500 in the series, got a couple of starts. He's been awesome. But you know, Tears and Dreiling are staples. Chapman and Inslee will rotate. But how about Dreiling and Tears, Ryan? I mean, Dreiling at 545 on the weekend. Kavars Tears, 500. They each had three hit days on Sunday. I mean, those two guys, 4-5 Tears Dreiling, it's just, it's so dangerous. And they've been so big for Tennessee this year.
They really have. And I mean, we talked about it. I think it was one of the big things we talked about in our season preview podcast. Tears and Dreiling were the guys that were, we saw them a lot last year. You know, they didn't have everyday starting roles, but they had roles. We knew they were good. We knew they were going to have opportunities this year. And I think the question we said was like, how good? We think these guys are going to be good bats in the middle of Tennessee's lineup. How good can they be? I mean, it's hard to really imagine them being any better than they have. And Tears, just the contact hitting aspect of it is what is so impressive to me. We know he has the power. We know that he's had that from the day he stepped on campus, even though he redshirted his freshman year. Just the way he's grown as a complete hitter, the way he can go foul pole to foul pole. And I mean, in SEC play, he is hitting 424. I mean, that's
Kavars.
It's Blake. Yeah, Kavars. Yeah. Blake Burks, 432. Chapman, and obviously only three starts and 10 at bats, is 500. So he's been really good. But those two guys, it feels like that 1-2-3-4 for Tennessee's lineup is, you know, so comparable to about anybody in the country. You feel like they're going to produce a run almost every time that those guys are coming up.
Yeah, and you extend it to 5 with Dreiling, and it's just murderer's row.
Yeah, there. You're right.
When
you're
Amick's right. Back.
I shouldn't even, you know, keep him out of it at this point at 5, because he's been so good too.
Yeah, it's kind of like 22, right, with Lipscomb at 5. I mean, you have to extend it to 5 there, because it's just such a mean 5 right there. As far as the shortstop position, we saw Ariel Antigua get a couple of starts. He's awesome defensively. There's no question about that. But I think, as I said earlier, Tennessee's going to have to win with offense, so you'll see Dean Curley still be the starting shortstop. But I wouldn't rule out a couple of Antigua starts here and there. And then the catcher spot, last thing, Ryan. Cannon Peebles continues to struggle. Didn't have a hit this weekend. Cal Starr got two starts behind the plate. Was fairly okay at the plate. We kind of know what Cal Starr is. A little bit better than last year offensively, but not going to wow you in any way. But I do think that unless Cannon can break out of the slump, I think Cal Stark's got to be the primary guy behind the plate.
Yeah, it kind of feels like he's grabbing that job, just because the trust level that they have, the coaches have with him and with Cal and his ability to work with the pitchers is so high. And he's, not that Peebles is bad there by any means, but that's just a strength of Cal's, and he's really, really good defensively. And if Peebles' bat's not going to be, you know, where I think we expected it to be, there's no reason for Cal not to get, you know, two starts in the weekend. So again, Peebles is not going to get left. I mean, I'd be shocked if at any point in the season he really gets left out of things. But it feels like Cal has earned the opportunity to get two starts, and certainly Peebles' bat, if he gets it going, could, you know, change that or make that a more interesting debate. But I think you got to give a lot of credit to Cal Stark for, in an offseason that Tennessee went out and grabbed a really good catcher out of the transfer portal and another guy in Dalton Bargo that could catch. For him staying, sticking in the competition, and he's fought and clawed and earned, you know, really a weekend starting spot on this team.
Yeah, he has. And he had a good day Sunday, too. Bargo, in fact, Tony Vitello went out of his way a little bit to mention twice this past weekend that Bargo's going to catch at some point. Now, I know you guys didn't see that a lot in the offseason, right? He was kind of just working at corner out, infield and outfield, but maybe Bargo becomes a guy who is catching for Tennessee later this season. And that obviously gives you a really good bat at the catcher spot, and you can experiment with DH a little bit more. Just saying, something to keep your eye out for as the season progresses.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought, especially if Peebles' bat continues to struggle and you have a guy that can really maximize how good your lineup can be. Because, I mean, if you get Bargo in there as the catcher, like, 1-9, that's We talk about there not really being a weak spot. I mean, there's really not. I mean, that's something else.
Exactly. Well, after 2 weekends at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, Tennessee will hit the road for the second time in SEC play this weekend, heading down to Auburn for Friday through Sunday series. First pitch on Friday is at 7 p.m. Eastern. 4:30 p.m. Eastern is the time on Saturday, and then 2 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. All three games on SEC Network Plus. Can't watch? No problem. RockyTopInsider.com has a live update thread at bat by at bat, super detailed with everything you need to know for each game. So be sure and keep it locked in there. You can also follow Rocky Top Insider at Rocky Top Insider on all social media platforms. That's Ryan Shumpert. He's at rshump00. That's S-C-H-U-M-P. I'm at Jack Foster Media, and we'll see you guys next time.